Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe, where the mission is to normalize the conversation on sexuality while providing you with a real education on sex, intimacy, and relationships. You know, the one you never got in school, from your parents, friends, or the internet. I'm your host, Susan Morgan Taylor. As a sex therapist for couples, I've empowered thousands of couples around the world to get back on the same page in intimacy using my proprietary Pleasure Keys process. Find out more about that at pleasurekeys.com. Join me here at the Sex Talk Cafe for juicy and provocative conversations with the experts. Let's get down to it. Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Sex Talk Cafe. So my guests today are Rano and Sierra, and they have been hailed as relationship visionaries, trailblazing mentors, and are devoted curators of love's highest potential. With over 20 years of experience in the relationship and personal development space, Rano and Sierra have transformed their own bold journey as a couple into a proven roadmap for helping others. Their mission is to guide couples in transforming their relationships into an endless wellspring of energy, growth, and fulfillment, not just for themselves, but for the greater legacy they want to create in the world. And today, I'm very excited about our topic. We are going to be talking about emotional disconnect and five tools that you can do right now to get back into connection. Rano and Sierra, thank you so much for being my guest today on the Sex Talk Cafe.
Ah, thanks for having us. Yeah, hello.
To be here.
Well, I just want to say that you guys are just such beautiful, brilliant lights. I love seeing the two of you together, and you've created an incredible community, which I'm sure we'll be sharing with our listeners more about as we get into our conversation today. But I'd love to hear, if you're willing to share a little bit about your journey as a couple. And I know that you overcame some really big challenges at the outset of your relationship. And I think that's such a good thing to start with, because I know it makes it really relatable. Relationships are, you know, they're ground for a lot of transformational work, and would love if you'd be willing to share a little bit about that, what that was like for you and how you found your way through it and how that's really formed the work you do today in the world.
All right, that's a big one. You want to begin?
Yeah, I'll kick it off and then pass it to you.
Okay.
So an interesting thing about us is we've known each other our entire lives. We grew up together, so we won't say how old we are, but we've known each other for 45 years. And we've been business partners for 18, together for 16, married for 14, almost 15 now. Mm-hmm. And we thought it was going to be easy because we were friends and business partners.
Like, we got this.
And the moment it turned romantic, like, it was like somebody pulled up, dropped off a U-Haul full of baggage.
Emotional baggage.
And it was just, we're like, oh, the week before, it was like, no problem. Uh-huh. The next week, it was like, well, you and this and that. We're like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, those sex hormones really, start to pull one over on your body.
Yeah. So it was really, we were self-aware enough to recognize that. Mm-hmm. And so we began the work right away. And really dove into, okay, what's really going on here? Clearly, it was fine the week before, and now all of a sudden, it's an issue. So what would you say are some of the things that we like overcame early on?
Yeah, well, that was a big one because, well, I would say we were a little blindsided by it. And so Ronald said, we got right to work figuring out, well, okay, we literally were like, this is not going to be an issue. But then I would have to say that because we worked together and I was his boss in one of our endeavors.
Yeah. And so, it was her magazine.
And so we had some power struggles and we had some dynamics around working together. Like, for example, his number one love language is touch. He loves to be touched and he loves to touch. And I love it. But when I'm in a work mode, I'm like, just leave me alone. I need to get this done. And so when we moved into romantic and I'd be like walking by to get something, or I'd have something on my mind and he'd want to give me a hug or grab me or kiss me or whatever. And I'm like, no, don't touch me. Right.
Resisted. And I was like, what's going on? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So we had a look at, we didn't even know that till years later when we took the love languages quiz, what was going on there. In fact, one of the things that we struggled with was my number one love language is acts of service. And he is very service-oriented.
Like the way I'm wired in my family, we're just all acts of service. We're willing to, you know, help out and pitch in. And that's just how I grew up. So she always felt loved.
Always felt loved. But he kept saying, I know you love me, but I don't necessarily
feel like you love me. I can tell you do, but it doesn't feel that way. Because mine were words of affirmation and physical touch.
Yeah.
And as the boss character most of the time, I wasn't getting a lot of those things. So it was challenging. But I was like, there's love here, and I feel like there's something here, and I know you love me. But so I stayed in it, But it was challenging the first several years of that.
And I was like, I don't understand. How much more can I do to make you feel loved? Like, I love you. I don't get what you need. What is the thing? So thank God that quiz, friends of ours told us about that quiz, and it illuminated that.
So much.
It was like, wow. Oh, okay, right. Because of that issue of not wanting to be touched in the workplace, and we're always working together.
Yeah. So literally it just changed to this, like, ooh, that's a really great design that you did. I really love what you're doing here. Just that much. I'm like, oh my God, she loves me. You know, it wasn't a huge, massive shift. Mm-hmm. But it made a big difference.
Mm-hmm. So for just the audio listeners who are not with us on video, all you did was just rest your hand on Sierra's shoulder. And like, that was enough. Just a little bit of that contact was enough for you to have that party you fed. And I think this is so relevant to our topic today around that, the disconnect that can happen. So I know we're going to go more into that. But before we do that, I am so curious about this piece around, you know, when sex comes into the scene, into the equation, what is going on there? Why does it make things weird? What is actually happening?
Oh my gosh. I know. Seriously. Right. I mean, hormones are such a potent force that I don't think we recognize enough as a species. Like, we're starting to really get it now that there's a lot more science, and there's, you know, menopause is a bigger conversation now, and midlife crisis.
Thank God.
Like that. Yeah. Thank God. Thank God. But I don't think we give enough weight to what is happening hormonally. So when a woman, I learned this actually from Alison Armstrong.
She's great. I love her work.
She's amazing. And she talks about how women, when they have sex, they get the oxytocin and they get that bonding hormone. And that's by nature's design so that they feel connected to the potential father of their child. And it's only until they bleed that they become free of that attachment, because then they know they're not pregnant and they're not like needing the protection. This is like cave, you know, early.
Evolutionary stuff that we did not get liberated from in the 60s and 70s, you know, stuff that.
Right. Exactly.
We may have liberated our mind.
But, nothing for our genetics. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think that there was this, once that bonding hormone happened and that physical connection, the physical intimacy, the sex, all this stuff came up, like all these memories, all of these things, all this it was more probably my attachment to him, where I was so not attached to him because
she couldn't be bothered before.
Maybe a little bit. But that brought up my, you know, my neediness or my fear of abandonment. And then there was all that stories from past relationships that showed up, from my, you know, my upbringing that showed up, and it was a thing. It was a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's real quickly, like, one of the things that we used to work with a lot of women that were wanting to get into relationship, because the magazine was a women's empowerment magazine and things like that before we got into a deeper couples book work. And we very specifically tell women, be very mindful of going out and having sex with somebody, especially if you like them. Have sex with people that you don't like
as much, or that you know that you like them, but you're not going to bring them home to mom and dad kind of thing.
Yeah. And really wait and hold out, because as soon as you do that, it changes everything. And then you're not making decisions from an informed place. You're making from an emotional, chemically induced cocktail versus, you know, real groundedness.
Yeah, it'll mess with your ability to see clearly.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, and then I think, you know, like being resourced and having skills to understand what's happening is so critical. And I know that that's a lot of what you do in your work with couples, but maybe just before we launch into that specifically, in this instance, you were sort of aware enough to realize what was happening, right? Like, these wounds were getting triggered and oh my gosh. And all of a sudden all these fears are there that weren't there just a week ago, and everything looks different because of this hormone cocktail that just happened. Yeah. How did you resource yourselves? Like, did you already have skills built in around how to work through some of this stuff, or did you have to seek out support? How did you find your way through?
I think a little bit of
the above.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. We were already deep in the personal development. So we did have skills. We did have an understanding. We had a lot of coaches in our inner circle. So that was helpful. People could give reflections. We actually happened to be working at the time for the magazine and the company we started together, which was a boutique design firm for service-based entrepreneurs who happened to be in the dating and relating and mating space. So we did have
a lot of random, but
we just kept attracting that clientele. I had done a lot of Alison Armstrong, PAX programs, things like that. So we could at least name the things mostly. But I think also Rano was very much in the beginning not going to tolerate certain things from me. He was like, and because we had a friendship base, he could be like, what are you doing? That's not who you are. Or woman, this is not going to work for me. Right. And it wouldn't be, it wasn't like.
And it probably did sound like that. That was also young and dumb.
Yeah, so. Exactly. But again, because we had such a long history with each other, I could hear it. I could hear it from him. Where I wouldn't say that that would be a good strategy for people that don't have
sure.
that.
Right.
Not
sure.
A good strategy now. It's,
yeah, definitely not. Totally. Yeah. But I think, you know, it was that reading books, diving in. And what we have inadvertently and really now we sort of codified that this is what we do and what we bring to the world and our community is we see our relationship as the best path for our own personal and partnership growth.
We're both here to make each other, help each other be the best people we can be. Yeah. And so that was like the start of our relationship.
And I knew very much that whatever was going on for me that I would want to blame him for or project onto him, that was an opportunity for me to look deeper. I was definitely aware of that piece. And and he was a little bit aware of that piece at the time, but he was he learns a little bit through osmosis through me.
Very typical thing that most women don't think that their men are doing the same work because it looks very different. And
and
he might be pacing along slower, but she now realizes 15 plus years in that not only am I learning, but I'm tracking very fast. I switch very fast. I'm on point and I don't slide back. So it's a good thing. It's like the click, 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 click. I'm the click every time it's moving. It's locked in.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you're speaking to is this, well, I love this term evolutionary partnership, but I'm not sure out there in the world who coined it. Y'all probably encountered that somewhere in your couple's work. And really this idea that we have an opportunity to be in relationship for the purpose of growth and for awakening and for being in service to love. And I love that in your bio, what was it? Devoted curators of love's highest potential. And there's just such an opportunity for that. And I think that that's, it can be sort of a misunderstood idea, or it can become just an idea and a concept. And I'm wondering maybe in practice, what is this? What does that even mean for those who maybe are really new to this idea of relationship being this ground for transformation and growth? And how does that actually look in practice?
We say partners, like, what do we say? I'm trying to remember.
We say a lot of
like
things.
Purpose-driven partnership,
yeah. Oh,
basically.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is this world is tough enough out there on your own, trying to figure it all out. If you're fortunate enough to have a great family that you can rest back into the arms of and heal and be held and experience love, then you're already like so much further ahead than so many people. And as we get older, our parents age and then they pass and then we're orphans and our friend groups change and all that kind of stuff. And so if you're choosing a life partnership, you really have an opportunity to have a best friend, have somebody that you can sit on the porch when maybe you're not interested in having sex anymore, when you're, you know, older and you're just kind of hanging out and you have a real opportunity to cultivate something extraordinary with that person and have a real ally on your team that loves you, that sees you, that's not blinded by things, that's not appeasing you, but that challenges you, that calls you up, that calls you forth, that calls you in, and that you do the same for them. And I think that far too often relationship is entered for, oh, we need to have kids, or, oh, I got to do this, or, oh, I have to do that.
The pressures. Yeah. The hormones.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And even the feeling of love, because I, you know, I see love as really not just a feeling. It's a practice. You know, that's sort of,
it's a commitment. What,
it's a commitment. And it's literally a moment by moment practice of vulnerability and staying open and being willing to take responsibility and being in service to oneself and to the other, what serves love in this moment. And that's a totally different conversation than I feel this feeling for somebody. And so now I'm going to be in relationship with them.
Yes. And you just described evolutionary love, evolutionary relationship in that's how we would define it as well. It's knowing that there's going to be moments where you don't feel as in love, where you don't feel as attracted, where you're going to have to, like you said, get vulnerable about things that are coming up and feelings that you're having that might have you question the validity of the relationship. One of the principles, we have 12 principles in our community, Eden World, and one of them is what's in the way is the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because when those things come up, when you start to question or doubt or be concerned or be sort of maybe like move your one foot towards the door, that's something that can, and we've seen in our own relationship again and again and again, there's something that hasn't been expressed. There's a need that hasn't been met. There's an exploration that hasn't been had. There's mm-hmm. a conversation that needs to happen. And because we live in a very emotionally stunted world, people don't necessarily have those skills. So it's easier to think, oh, I'm going to look outside or I'm going to question this thing and not bring the real depth of what I'm feeling forward. I'm scared they're going to reject me if I do. I'm scared they're going to be mad at me or react or blow up at me or they're going to whatever. There's all these ideas of what's going to happen and maybe some past experience of those things happening. But when you go towards the thing that feels like it's starting to pull you apart, mm-hmm. there's so much more opportunity to deepen and grow as individuals, but as a couple.
Yeah. And you know this so well from your own personal journey and your pleasure practices and mm-hmm. the depth that you've gone through to just understand yourself better. It's the same thing. It doesn't stop in relationship. It actually amplifies it even more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I just went through something with my partner the last few days and it was, you know, like really when those tender parts get touched, I think it really helps when you have two people who are willing to stay in it, stay committed. And when you can see the thing that's actually happening and not take it for face value mm-hmm. and be able to come into that of like, wow, I noticed that this fear is coming up or, you know, we went really deep and now I'm having some of these parts of me be touched or illuminated that maybe were easier to not have to deal with or that hadn't really been touched on until now. And I think there can be a challenge though, and tell me what your thoughts are with this, when two people are both triggered and maybe they don't realize that's what's going on, or one does and the other doesn't, and it can spiral and it can create this disconnect. I know we're here to talk about like how we overcome that emotional disconnect. So, but when we get into it in these ways, what's happening there? And then what are some ways that we can get clarity around that to even name what's going on if we're not at that place yet where we're conscious?
Well, it all really comes down to, we call it being under-resourced. Other people would say you're in emotional dysregulation, right? Or your nervous mm-hmm. system is out of, you know, is having a reaction. And the thing is to become, for us, it's like, okay, I just blew up. You just blew up back at me, right? Where we hit our trigger points. We have a practice where we're like, okay, pause, and we'll go into noble silence for a minute. Like say we're in the car and things are getting heated because somebody hasn't eaten and somebody's, you know, hasn't slept. And all of a sudden
the iPhone won't find the darn.
Yeah. The map's off or what, you know, we're just like the tension's got high. Yeah.
Never happened to us.
Yeah. Never. Exactly.
I've heard it's happened to others.
And we're like, what is going on? And of course, you know, there's a part where we want to dig in and just escalate it because there's something about that.
Yeah, we used to for sure. And then we wouldn't talk to each other for, you know, hours.
But we would make something that is so benign, so much bigger. And so I think all of us need to recognize more and more and more about where our capacity is and where our nervous systems can meet the moment. And if we're feeling out of sorts, we're feeling triggered, we're feeling upset, we're feeling reactive, that is a big signal to go, oh, wait, before we go any further with this, let me just pause. So our practices,
noble silence.
We'll say noble silence. because we're both feeling it going nowhere. Mm-hmm. And we'll set a timer. We'll be like, okay, 5 minutes. That means everybody shuts their mouth. Nobody says a word.
Don't even look at each other.
And like you're for 5 minutes. And during that 5 minutes, I'm like, okay, breathing, finding my regulation, but kind of co-regulating, but a little bit separate because we're both needing to do the work.
Yeah. And I'm like, what the hell is going on with her? It's all. And then I finally realize, oh, it's me, really.
And it just gives a second to come back into a space where it's like, okay, you know what? Actually, we could use a little more silence and let's just like wait till we get to where we're going to like address this, or we'll call our tool. You know, this is really a bigger conversation. It's a sacred space conversation. We don't have it to give right now. We're not available to do this or deal with this. So let's just regulate and then move on. But know that we, by calling sacred space, we're going to go back at a scheduled time when we're both more resourced and have the deeper conversation.
So that's, go ahead. There's two tools.
Well, that's what I was going to highlight. Obviously, the two things you just said are two of your tools for how couples can come back into connection. So why don't you name what those are? And then I'd love to comment on what you just shared.
Yeah.
Great. So the first one again is, we call it noble silence. Some people call it pause. Noble silence comes from, I forget which meditation tradition, Vipassana meditation. Mm-hmm. And it basically just means like you are, it's almost as if your eyes are closed and you're not interacting with anyone else but yourself. And so you avert eyes of anyone else and you stay just with yourself. So for us, it's an agreement that we make ahead of time to get that noble silence. And so when we say noble silence, we both know we've made an agreement to drop whatever we're talking about. There's no last minute. It's like, okay. Yeah,
no, it means
zip it.
Zip it now.
Shut the F up.
Shut the F up. Exactly. And so that's tool number one, noble silence. After that noble silence is complete, or you can also use this in another time when it's not so heightened. If we recognize that the pattern or the issue or the challenge that we're talking about is bigger than what we have space for, like we're about to go to dinner with friends, it's tired and it's late at night, whatever that is, when we don't have the capacity to have that conversation.
Or we're just too emotionally unregulated to have
it. Literally whip up our hand like we're holding a card, as if we were like holding a yellow or red card on a soccer field as a referee. And we say, hey, sacred space. And so we joke and say we're throwing the sacred space card. We're like, follow everybody, pause, you know, and we just say sacred space. So we like to do visual cues with a lot of our tech tools, because that visual, it's kind of like a dog. A dog looks more at your visual cues than, and men are kind of like dogs. So it's helpful for all.
And I'm a visual person.
So sacred space is the other tool.
Love it. And I think what tends to happen a lot with in relationships is we get activated, we get triggered, right? It's starting to go south. The argument is happening. And even a lot of times when couples catch it, what they want to do is try to solve it right away. But our brains are literally off, prefrontal cortexes are offline at that point. We literally cannot be rational. We cannot take another person's point of view. We're in our hindbrain, fight or flight. You're my enemy. You know, so I love this piece and I like that you have a name for it, and the physical component to it also is really novel and really brilliant, and kind of having that shared language, right? That a relationship, we have a shared language that we both know what that means, and then you can really implement the tools together and you're on the same page with it. I love that. Really powerful. And so until you can cool down and then be able to get that prefrontal cortex back online. And so that's some of what the sacred space is about and the noble silence, right?
Yeah.
And what I love too is like, because of the noble silence practice that we have now, it's very rare that we get in any sort of fights or disagreements or arguments, because we just stop it before it even happens, because it's just not who we are. It's not what most people are. Most people don't want to fight. They don't want an aggressive, angry marriage. They want fun, joy, peace, happiness.
Yes.
And so if you just pause it, and then when you're done, be like, hey, babe, I'm sorry.
Never. Like, I didn't mean to be so. I've just been off. Geez. I didn't sleep last night. And like, I just, you know, whatever the thing is.
It just goes back to like fun.
Yeah.
Well, so you uniquely work with power couples. So can you say what's a power couple for those who don't know, and why? Why have you chosen power couples to be the people that you mostly cater to and minister to with your work?
Power couples. So we believe that power, you know, that's a term that gets thrown around a lot. And often you think of maybe a power couple as a big celebrity, like a Michelle and Barack Obama, or
who Beyonce. Are absolutely a power couple.
Yeah. From Beyonce and Jay-Z, like they represent success as a couple. And that is an element of it, but you don't have to be like a super, super successful person. We hold power couple as two people that are equally powerful, and their presence as a couple shows up as such, like you feel the
amplification
of their unity, and that they are typically up to something. They're on some sort of mission, or they're impact driven in some way. They might be in business together, or they might just be, you know, all heart wanting to change the world. But they also, the biggest definition that we hold is that they are putting their relationship as the fuel source for the things that they do. It's not this secondary thing. A lot of times people who are highly successful, their relationship takes a backseat or a side burner or something. Sure. And then it's not as powerful for what they're up to. And then they have issues. So we believe that when this works, everything works better. It serves everything. And so that's how we define it. And that's even why we love to work with power couples, or at least help couples recognize the power, the empowerment that they have as a couple to bring to make their relationship their North Star. So then again, it can serve everything.
You can carry so much more as two people, like physically. So imagine what your relationship can carry when you're in sync.
Exactly. Yeah. And how awful life feels when you're not in sync. Like when something's off in your intimate relationship, like it colors everything, every aspect of life.
Yes.
So it's a worthwhile pursuit to kind of learn what you guys are sharing and what you do at Eden World, which is your community for this work. Well, how can you tell in a power couple? And is it different? Are the signs that a power couple are disconnected different than, you know, someone who's maybe not a power couple?
It's definitely sometimes harder to spot, because power couples are very good
at putting on a good face.
They have agreements in place of how they treat one another in public. And you know, oftentimes if we're working with a power couple and they're, you know, they've hired us to either do some private coaching or they come into our community, we have a lot of peer-to-peer type things that happen in our community. So there's a lot of open sharing.
Yeah.
And so someone that, oh my God, these guys are perfect. They've got everything on paper. They look great. And then blah, 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 blah. We haven't had sex in a year. We're struggling with this. I feel like he's so needy and he just kind of grosses me out now, but I used to be so attracted to him. And he's like, I don't understand. Like all those things you can't really tell until you know, take off the masks and get lower or get deeper.
Yeah. Get deeper. Exactly. Yeah. And I would say the distinction too, is that I think power couples are dealing with maybe, I don't want to say higher level problems, because that's not the right word at all. But there's sort of, I'll just say they're not necessarily arguing about who's taking out the trash. The day to day, they've got pretty dialed for the most part. Doesn't mean they might not going to get sidelined by that, because we're human, right? Things happen. Stupid things piss us off, and we don't always have great, we fall off our systems. But I think that they're navigating challenges at a place that's just a little bit more, more is at stake, maybe, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the piece. And so, and also they have a reputation to protect. And then it comes back to, okay, so we're putting on this great face, but now we feel like a fraud because behind the scenes. And so they might even feel extra tender about their stuff.
Yeah.
Perhaps, and that's and that's why with what we do with an Eden World, it normalizes everything. There's no topic that's off the table, because our biggest thing is relationship is messy. Being human is messy. There's typical patterns that we all go through. No matter how successful you are in life or business or money or what age you are or how many marriages you've had or what your parental upbringing was, there's similar issues that couples go through. And so having a place where they can just hear from other couples and make it a safe space to do that sharing, it's like, it changes everything, because oftentimes we hear this often, you know, this in the world, like don't share your dirty laundry. Don't air your dirty laundry.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, don't tell anybody about you're not having sex. Don't tell anybody that, you know, you had an affair. Don't tell anybody, whatever. It's like, no, in Eden, we actually encourage you to put your dirty laundry out, and we can all just be like, oh, look at all that dirty laundry.
I guess we all got dirty laundry.
Well, and I find that, cause you know, I work with couples as well, like you do. And I have found that it's one of the roadblocks that I encounter sometimes, especially in doing any kind of group work with couples or where there's other couples present, you know, whether it's group work or just couples working together in the presence of other couples. There's really a lot of this, like, oh, I could never talk about my sex life in front of other couples. Like, there's this shame, I think, that a lot of couples carry. And I'm really curious, how do you normalize it so that it feels safe for couples to bring their dirty laundry in, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
We go first.
Exactly. I was going to say that. Yeah.
And when we design experiences, things like that, we usually put together like a group of couples and we call it a design team. And one of our mottos is we grow first. And it's the same thing of if we're up in front or we're facilitating anything, we share vulnerably first. We say, hey, this is what's going on in our sex life right now, if that's the topic, or this is the fight that we just had, or the misagreement.
This is the challenge we're having with our money, or this is the thing that we're up-leveling, this is the thing we're working on, raw in the moment. We just had that breakdown 2 minutes before we got on this call, you know?
Yeah. So how about you? What's going on with you guys?
I love it. Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah, really setting the example is so valuable. And okay, so you say that there's 5 characteristics that contribute to emotional disconnect in power couples. We know what those are for our listeners.
Yes. The biggest one is these things.
Ah, yeah, the cell phones, the devices.
The devices.
The evil, evil device.
I'm guessing you grew up around the same-ish time as us. And when we were growing up, we were just joking about this with friends the other day, mm-hmm. that it was, don't be home until dinner.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Get out of the house, and I don't want to see you.
No way to get hold of you. No way.
You just running wild through the neighborhood. Parents have no idea. We're down like playing in the sewer drains and stuff. Like, we could have died.
All sorts of things. No helmets. None of that stuff.
Oh, biking across town. Exactly. Yep.
And so, kids these days. You know, that's why in Florida here, where we live in the winter, they outlawed, like, you can't have a cell phone, or you can't, you know, they banned all social media until the age of 14, mm-hmm. because it's messing with the brains of these developing children.
Yeah, I just read something about the Gen Z ability to discern, you know, propaganda or fakeness. They can't tell the difference between.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. So, and one of the biggest issues that we've been in, it wasn't a fight, but it was a recurring pattern that just came up for us recently and just a few weeks ago. And where I wasn't like putting our relationship on the chopping block, but I was questioning if we should be in relationship together, because this pattern had been in our relationship for 15 years, which is sort of what we talked about before, where she's the boss and all that kind of stuff, but where she's working so much or being distracted by this device.
Yeah, sucked into the news cycles.
And what was happening is that the news and all the stuff that was going on was more important than me.
I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of big news going on right now.
Yeah. I totally understand how. I totally understand why.
Yeah.
And I totally understand in some ways, like, her upbringing. She grew up in a political family. It's a part of her life to be tuned into it. Mm-hmm. And it's a massive distraction that takes away so much more bandwidth that could be put towards our relationship. And so that's probably the biggest one that I see all across the world.
And I think uniquely to power couples, I know I worked with a couple, both had really high level, high visibility jobs, CEOs and such. And one of the massive issues was he was constantly on his phone at dinner. He'd take his wife out on a date and he'd get a call. I got to go take this call. She'd sit there at the dinner table by herself. I mean, you know, it was a huge issue. And then he can't figure out why she doesn't want to have sex with him.
Oh, exactly.
Right. So so I think that's such a good thing to highlight. Then I think that is, well, maybe not. It is unique to power couples and probably to all of us, but I could see how it could come and be even more of a problem with a power couple who, you know, is what
that
you work with.
Going on all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which also can be tied to, you know, there's workaholism, right? There's this mm-hmm. idea that we need to keep producing in order to feel valued in the world. And I think people that are on mission or have their own business specifically in relationship, that also becomes a driving force. And while we know that when our relationship thrives, everything else thrives, we preach it, we practice it,
yeah.
and we still, more me than him, we still fall into the trap of overworking, overgiving.
Yeah. Sure.
Right. You know, wanting to make sure that we keep meeting our, you know, our goals yeah. or hitting, you know, getting launching these programs or whatever. Right.
And like, if I don't take this call, then my business is going to fall apart or, yeah. or I won't make the revenues and this. And I know we're going to talk about the tools, the five tools, to imagine go right in line with the five actual characteristics, I'm guessing. So let's continue with the characteristics of this disconnect in power couples. What would number two be?
So I think another one is the communication challenges. And there's really like 20 or 400, but we're just kind of highlighting.
Five.
Yeah, the top five.
We'll use those. The other 395 happen on our next call.
Yeah. Communication is a big one, and it's either the lack thereof of expressing and swallowing and putting it under the rug and actually not talking about it. That's one side of the communication challenge. And then the other side of it is the way that we communicate is like your CEO couple, for example, like treating your significant other like an employee or in the same kind of communication ways that you would your bros or however it is mm-hmm. and not recognizing, oh wait, here, I'm here with an emotional creature. let's what are her needs?
Can't be solved with facts and figures.
Yeah. And some people love
it. That could be hot, you know, if that's
totally
your thing, you
know. Like we have
at least they take that to the bedroom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Communication is a big one, and just the breakdown of it or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Swallowing, avoiding, denying, repressing.
Yeah.
Avoiding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then not.
Yep. Or even defensiveness.
Defensiveness, right? Or not even mm-hmm. talking about it like mm-hmm. well, like and yeah. just poor communication.
Yeah. And then I would say even with that, the time to resolve, like you might make up for a second, but then the issue hasn't been taken all the way.
It'll fester
and it'll come back again. Right. So these repetitive arguments, because yeah. you're like, okay, fine. I feel good enough. Are we good? We good? We're good. All right. And then move on. And then boom, it hits you again. And then boom, it hits you again versus going, you know what? We're going to need to actually take a couple hours out of our busy lives and really work this one through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. What's number three?
Space comes in. Yeah. But okay, yeah. number three, lack of self-care. Again, we kind of touched on this with the workaholism. It can be so easy when you're serving greatly to not give to self or not give to the relationship. But mm-hmm. you can't give to the relationship if you're not giving to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I have definitely fallen prey to this one. I don't have children in this lifetime, but my business endeavors, my community yeah. feels like my babies. It feels sure. like the thing. And so if somebody's needing something, or the business is needing something, I'm going to naturally, like a mom, go tend to that and overstep. Oh, I had that massage, but now this freaking email stuck in the system. How do I get the team? Whatever, stupid things. And Ronald's constantly being like, go, don't worry about that thing, you know, and because he yeah. knows that if I don't go to that massage and I get swept right. back into it, he's gonna suffer
yeah.
because
yeah, it's selfish. Go get that massage for me.
Totally.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's totally. Gonna fall back on him eventually. He won't get what he needs. I won't be pleasant around him, all these
yeah.
sorts of-
yeah
sure. So big.
Yeah. Well,
self-care also, it doesn't have to necessarily be a massage. It really is just a big way that we look at relationship. If you believe in God or a higher power or something like that, great. If you don't, just cut this part out and you can be atheist in this belief. But we believe that the number one relationship is you and God. That's what you mm-hmm. got first. And then you and yourself, which yeah. could ultimately be the same relationship.
Sure.
But then after that, it's your significant other.
Yeah.
And then your family, and then your kids, or your kids, then your family and your friends and things like that. But most of the time it gets inverted. So that's a big yes. part of what self-care means. It's like you've got to put yourself first
right.
in a positive way, so that you have so much more, your cup overfloweth,
right?
You have more to give.
Much more to give. Yeah. And that can be such a hard one for people who are busy and creating things in the world to, we think if we sacrifice ourselves in that way, that we'll be able to make more money or make a bigger impact or have a greater reach. But the opposite is usually true. We have to take time to relax and rest and fill the cup. And I know how important that is for me personally, but I can see how that could really be a huge challenge for a lot of people. And I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, somebody was telling me about a book they were reading. I don't remember the name of it. Maybe it's what I'm about to say, but something about the resting is revolutionary, mm-hmm. right? Right. We're living in a society where it's so much about producing, production, go, go, go.
Yeah.
To take rest is not only essential and necessary, but it kind of bucks the system and starts to change the dynamic we have within the system.
Yeah. It could be a little bit more European in our work ethic.
Yeah. Right. But no, we have puritanical roots here in the United States and we are sticking to it.
Yes. Let's work real hard. Shame each other for sex. And
Yes. No dessert.
Working really well.
Eating your peas and carrots first and then you can eat your chocolate cake.
Totally.
Are there a couple more characteristics that you want to talk about, or should we talk about some of these tools if we haven't already? I know we've kind of woven some of them in, I think, but
yeah, I mean, we can just list a few. We don't have to go deep into them.
Sure.
I would just say a big one too is, and we touched upon it, but power struggles, right?
Ooh, yeah.
Who's the boss where? Who leads? Who follows? Who's, you know, when's the best place for somebody to lead or follow? And you, when you get two big personalities, you got big challenges.
Oh yeah. Two people trying to lead the dance at the same time is that's called an arm wrestle, not a dance.
Exactly.
Totally.
That's for MMA wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which also kills libido, right? Because if I'm if I'm too bossy or I'm too demeaning or I'm trying to be the boss in too many areas, it's just.
I like it when she's the boss in the bedroom.
Ooh.
Right, exactly. But if in life it makes him feel emasculated or, like he can't, he's like, just then for like men like to win, right? So it's like, I can't win at this. So
can't
then you
win.
Just handle it. And then
she's burnt out and then that
hits my libido, right? And then and not as attractive or sexy to him either when I'm being
right.
Or to herself.
You know. Yeah, all the right. It's just like a messy
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a really big one. So now I don't work in a business with my partner, but we both have very mission-driven businesses. But for partners like you, the two of you who work together and you have a business together and you both gotta be in like get shit done mode. How do you manage this piece? Because exactly what you're saying can absolutely kill the attraction, kill the eroticism. And do you have agreements around that of when you're going to lead, follow, and who's going to kind of be in which role and when?
Mostly we do. We have in our personal life, which also falls into the business as well, we have what we call keeper roles. And it's identifying who is holding the domain of, like, for example, the car and the car repairs and the car insurance, right? That is domain.
I'm the keeper of
He's the keeper of the car.
I'm the keeper of technology. So,
nice.
I handle all the tech. And she's like, my phone, this. If we get new phones, I make sure it's all swapped over. She's not even dealing with any of that stuff. It's just like done. It's something that I enjoy and it's something that I do anyways. And so I'm just the keeper of that.
I'm the keeper of connection and social calendaring and like looking and seeking out new things and finding fun things to go and do and communities to connect with. I'm the keeper of spirituality, really. Not that he's not. And again, he's kind of like, it's like lead and then sub
I
or lead.
Love it.
Like, yeah. So it means that ultimately, if I'm in charge of it, I need to make sure it happens. But I could always lean on him and say, "Hey, can you do this? Right? Can you make that reservation or whatever?"
Oh,
but
love it.
Yeah. So that helps delineate a lot of things, and it's good to revisit them so often because sometimes neither of us are great at the keeper, and it keeps falling on nobody. And then we're like, "Oh, that's the place where we need." Hire help.
The keeper of the household. Let's just hire cleaners for that.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
It's a lot of extra effort. And you know what? Like, let's just figure out how to
pay. Like that can be outsourced very easily.
Absolutely.
Versus other things can't. Yeah. And I love that. That's so great. And like couples can have a conversation, like sit down and delineate that and can take away a lot of assumptions, which always and only lead to resentment. And each person is sort of clear on who's doing what and when, but knowing that you can still source and resource from one another if you're struggling or need some extra support. On this note, I want to ask this as one of our last questions here, because I think it's such a common issue for relationships, not sex, but money. How would you suggest, or how do y'all, if you want to share your own money management strategies in terms of having joint bank accounts, separate bank accounts, paying expenses together. And I know there's probably not one right answer for everybody, but I'm really curious over the years that you've been working with couples and in your own relationship, what do you find tends to work best?
Go for it. So I'm the keeper of that. So you said it well, there's no one right way. You know, my parents grew up where, and they still to this day, they have different envelopes and they put cash in those envelopes to like, okay, this is what I have for groceries. Like they're very budgeted and they're very clear with that. They each have their own separate accounts. They have shared accounts and they put it together like that. So for us, like we have separate accounts, shared accounts, we've got business accounts. So we have a lot of different things. And, I pretty much handle everything. Sierra gets an allowance so that she has certain amounts of money so that she knows what she's got. It's an allowance, but
I'm allowed.
Our friends too, that are, they're very, very wealthy. His wife has an allotment or, you know,
that could be kinky. That could get a little.
It's super
have
great.
A little fun with this.
Totally. It works for certain people. Some people be like, hell no, no man's going to control my money. And that's fine too. And like, it's really up to you how you want to set it up. But I will say this. We've brought in a lot of money experts over the years to speak to our community. And the biggest thing is the alignment of what money actually means to you, what you're building towards. As like, are we trying to raise a family? Are we wanting a house? Are we wanting multiple homes? Are we wanting toys? Like, you know,
boats
and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like what is our money for? Do we want to spend it on our family? Do we want to spend it on our friends? Do we want retreats? Do we want vacations? If you don't answer all those questions, it doesn't matter what your accounts are. It's going to create a lot of funk.
Friction. Yeah, because you're not on the same page. And so there's really something important about being on the same page with the vision for what you're doing in the relationship and how's the money going to support that? And how are you going to operate and manage the money in order to accomplish those shared vision or those shared goals? And I think that's where a lot of couples get. Yeah, there's a lot of pain that can happen in that arena. And someone doesn't feel free or they feel controlled, or one person mismanages it and the other one's completely blind to what's happening and where the money's going. And I don't think any of those things are great strategies. So having the conversation, having the clarity and getting on the same page and being disciplined, I imagine, too, is part of that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's also the other dynamics of like maybe somebody has agreed to be more of the breadwinner because they're just more successful in whatever they're up to. And then that's important, though, for the other partner to feel like they have their spending either way. And that it's not
right.
That's so managed by the person who is making money, because that is a massive.
It's a terrible feeling.
Yeah. Exactly. And the agreements, too, of like, what is the of something. Like one of our dear friends, we were just connecting with him last night. You know, he's a rather successful entrepreneur. She had a successful career, but she left the career in the city and everything to be in the relationship together. Mm-hmm. And now she's getting out there on her own, but there's no way in hell she could afford their lifestyle, what she's building, what she's creating right now. And there was some power struggles for a while of like, I'm doing all this and what are you doing? And there wasn't a value of what she was bringing to the relationship.
Yes.
They had to really talk about, oh, wow, you cooking food for me every day and making sure I feel good and handling all this and that and everything. Wow. Yep. I didn't realize that's valuable to me. And so making sure that it's.
Yeah. And that there's an agreed upon understanding. Yeah.
That's huge, because I think we don't tend to notice that the value of what one partner can bring when they manage the household or manage the children and the food. And I mean, that's huge. And it allows the other partner to do what they're doing in a way. Mm-hmm. Without that, like, you know, I say, well, without her taking care of the kids, like you'd have to hire a nanny.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you would have to stay home and you could work half as much of the hours that you're currently working and making half of what you're making. So yeah, like really putting a value on some of these softer, like not soft skills, but like these areas of domain that we tend to disregard, unfortunately. But I think this is a topic for another conversation.
For sure.
There's, like, there's a resurgence of this sort of splitting up the roles in this way. I feel like sort of what I'm calling like the revival of the modern housewife in a way. Like, and I think it's a beautiful thing where I've had a lot of my clients who are really choosing to, you know, kind of these more traditional gender roles in a way. And there's something that's actually, and it's just conscious choice.
That's awesome.
And it works for them and it's beautiful. And I really see that there's sort of a revival of that. But regardless of gender roles, like I think it's beautiful to have that be a conversation, particularly in the scenario like what you just described, where one person maybe is bringing in a little bit more and the other one is offering a different set of valuable contributions that maybe don't have a bank account attached to it.
Absolutely.
Right. Exactly.
It, just to underline this and then we can move on. Like,
yeah,
we have been actively looking for a personal / executive assistant, and to really hire a good one, like minimally you're going to be at 50 grand a year, and a lot of them hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And if you think about what they would do for us, it's pretty much the same as what a housewife might do for the entire house and everything. There's a lot there. So really look at the value of that. Cause I love it.
Such good advice. Yeah. Well, tell our listeners how they can connect with you, where they can learn more, how they can Eden World. I just want to say you have a beautiful, beautiful couples community. It is just so precious. So maybe let our listeners know how they can connect in with that or find out more about what you guys are up to out there in the world.
Awesome.
Yeah, you got me too, right?
Yeah.
So our community is, it's a peer-to-peer network, and there's lots of ways that you can come and connect and get a lot of stuff for free. If you want more in-depth and deeper dives, you can, you know, invest money into different programs or things like that as well.
Retreat.
But there's a plethora of amazing things that are no cost to you. That was our desire to give our work back to the community and let the community keep sourcing it. And so we also put together an amazing gift for your community as well, called our Epic Date Formula, which talks about some of the things that we do. And one of the questions that we didn't answer that you said, when we have all these funky things going on, how do we stay connected? And it's in our Epic Date practice.
Oh, great.
EPIC stands for Erotic, Playful, Intimate, Creative, and it's a whole process. And so if you want to go to edenworld.org/sextalkcafe, you can get this free ebook, and it's an amazing gift. And then from that, you can find all about Eden World, and you can be like, oh, I want to join the free membership. I want to go over here and there. But that's the way, the easiest way that you can access that.
Yeah, one link, one access point.
Love it. That's brilliant. And I'll make sure to drop that in the show notes as well with the link. But otherwise, it's edenworld.org/sextalkcafe for our listeners out there. One URL, one stop, gets you into everything. Get that free guide. I'm going to go get that. That sounds great. I would love to know that. Well, I want to thank you so much, Rano and Sierra. It's just been such a pleasure to have you on the Sex Talk Cafe. Thank you for sharing your time and for sharing your wisdom with our listeners today.
Pleasure. It's been an honor. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
You're so fabulous.
Yeah. Love it.
Thank you for joining me for the Sex Talk Cafe. Please be sure to leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. And if you're ready to discover the 3 secrets to deepening connection, enhancing pleasure, and expanding your orgasmic potential, then be sure to grab your copy of the Pleasure Keys ebook at pleasurekeys.com. To learn more about my private coaching, couples retreats, and other offerings, be sure to connect with me at pathwaytopleasure.com or find me on social media at Susan Morgan Taylor. Thank you again so much for joining me today for the Sex Talk Cafe.